Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Governor Jelly Belly followed suit with the Florida District Court judge's injunction against the mask mandate on transportation and lifted the mask mandates on transportation in Illinois. The reason that he had to do that, well, there's twofold. One is, they're both sort of political, but one is because of confusing statements that were emanating from local units of government in this state. For example, yesterday after our show, Chicago O'Hare International Airport, you've heard of it.
Yes.
Their official Twitter account posted this: the safety and security of passengers and employees, the highest priority of the Chicago Department of Aviation. The CDA will continue to follow and observe and enforce all guidance by federal, state, and local health security authorities. This includes Illinois Executive Order 2022-06, which requires masks on public transportation and in transportation. So people, wait, so the local or the state supersedes the federal? No, I don't think so. And Pritzker made it clear yesterday that, right, no, you don't think so.
And then after that happened, then Metro dropped their mask mandate. And then the CTA quickly, I mean, how quickly everything fell yesterday. I couldn't believe it. But, you know, Dan,
couldn't believe it. It was required so there wasn't confusion, number one. And because who pays a political price if there's confusion and frustration? And number two, you know, this is good news for the Democrats, these COVIDians, because who do you really have left that is married to the mask wearing? You have the dyed-in-the-wool COVIDian cultists and few others. And so this relieves them of the responsibility of having a call a halt to it. They have somebody else they can point
to. But there are so many students in CPS that still wear masks. They'll never take them off. And people on the CTA that were spoken to yesterday, here's another reason why I can't do it. One lady even said yesterday that it's her security blanket.
If I see the majority of people on the train with masks, I would keep it on.
It's probably about time. Right, wrong, or indifferent, I think that people are probably way past this and just ready to move on with life.
Yeah, a pro and a con. But, I mean, NBC5, if I may, did a follow-up story. Is it too risky to take that summer vacation with your unvaccinated child because people aren't wearing masks now? And they found a local doctor who said this.
When you're actually on board the plane, the doors are closed, air is going through the HEPA filters, you're actually quite safe on the plane. But it's more the process of getting to the plane, going through the TSA checkpoint, traveling through the airport.
What should you do? Should you cancel your summer travel plans?
Oh, my God.
It really depends on your level of risk tolerance. If you are on planes, if you're traveling, you have kids over 2 under the age of 5, just encourage them to mask up.
And so, they can't let it go. And they find a doctor who says, no, but keeps masking your kids 2 to 5 up indefinitely.
You need to let that go, too, because the moral outrage over these banal responses that we've been hearing for, I mean, we're getting into years plural now. It just doesn't have any currency.
I still go to a church where you have to mask up. I still am around tons of children who are scared to let go of their masks.
They actually
think that they might die or bring something home to someone and kill them. And I have to remind them, germs aren't bad. But I can't discuss it with them because that's stepping over the boundaries. Can't discuss it at all.
Well, those are the institutions that you've chosen to be a part of.
Yep.
So,
well, because I'm not leaving my church because they want me to leave, Dan. I'm not going to make it easier for them. because they shame me and Easter Sunday try to get me kicked out. I'm like, I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
So, well, this we're still masked everywhere. Everyone is still masked. There's at least more than 50% of the people are constantly masked, even outside walking by themselves.
So
how are we going to deprogram people?
We're not.
And if you try to, you're considered, you know, you're a MAGA supporter. You voted for Trump.
So what? Why do you care?
Because it drives me nuts because it's stupidity. Why? Watching stupid people walk down the street. And I wish it didn't bother me, but it bothers me to the bone that they're doing that.
Well, you need to get a grip. You need to deprogram
yourself. I need to move.
Well, okay, fine. You do that.
Which I will do in a year and a half.
Stop trying to manage other people's lives for them. Take the same position vis-a-vis them that we take, that they take with us, or that we wish they would take with us, which is just mind your own business. If you want to wear a mask, whatever. If you want to go on TikTok and post videos about mask wearing, if you want to proselytize about masks, go ahead. Free country.
312-642-5600, Turnkey Debt Pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA and a quick comment.
But this is the first manifestation of people's stupidity you've ever experienced.
It's just the government did that to them, and they knew better.
No, they didn't.
No, but everyone's lazy. They don't look at our unmasked neighboring states and their numbers every day like we do.
They don't look at comparisons to what Illinois does on a range of topics. Why would this be any different? There are people that are very suggestible, that they're people that have a default trust in the government for whatever reason. There are people that don't really want dominion over their own lives. But they're happy to use force to compel you to live the way that they are choosing to live or desire to live, which is under somebody else's thumb. And that's just how it is. So you rebel against that sort of authoritarian impulse, including among private citizens that are, you know, essentially, you know, Stasi in training. And then you go about your life. What is the point of worrying about all of that? The human condition doesn't change. You can't get people from a position of unreason with reason. They didn't get to this COVIDian totalitarianism through reason. You're not going to deprogram them. You're not going to kidnap them in a van and take them somewhere and make them read City Journal and other outlets that have all the data and the science. You're not going to make them listen to lectures of Jay Bhattacharya or Martin Kulldorff. It's not going to happen.
The 150 plus studies I have in my car I carry with me that talk about the inefficiency of masks. And I start with basically that cloth mask you're wearing.
Stop.
They take it off you if you go into a hospital because it's not effective. It's all just stupid.
Why? You're just screaming into a cavern. Why? Why bother? If people want to live in the darkness, then that's their choice. You know, you present your evidence on this show. You talk amongst your friends and in your social circles. And if people want to run, you know, screaming into the night, then they can run screaming into the night. Why get all worked up about it?
Because I hate being around stupid people.
Well, then you're in the wrong place.
Sister's school, they're still 90% masked.
So?
They're not going to change.
Yeah. At some point, you know, there'll be attrition. Attrition happens at a different pace in different places. So? Craig Mont-Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy, and thanks for taking my call. And this is Dan to Amy's point and everything. There are some of these people running around. They got those masks, but I know exactly what's going on. These are the same kind of people, and you talk about it sometimes, that how can they vote for these socialist dumb rats, something like that? These are people that bought into everything. They bought into the Russia lies.
They're government-centric people, and so they're either the beneficiaries of transfer payments, or they're people that like to lord over other people through the distribution of transfer payments. That's the left. So what is complicated about this? Nothing. Zero. zero is complicated about this. I mean, we can prattle on and on about this for hours on end, like some of these conservative talk shows do. But I mean, you're just coming back to the same place. It's actually very simple. It's very straightforward. What's happened and what continues to happen. And so now that in most places you've been relieved from these mandates, you don't have to rage against what's going on in a particular institution or city or restaurant, then don't worry about those other people that you know are part of the forces of darkness. I don't know how else to describe them. Don't worry about it.
And for local media to talk about, you know, is it too risky to take local a summer media. Vacation with right. your 2 to 5 year old now that people aren't in masks? And that doctor that we just played, Dr. Sheridan, whatever, went on to say, well, if you the safest form of transportation is to drive. Oh, come on. I know. I shouldn't watch local news either.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis providing an example of how you fight the left from the stated principles of the right. Disney wants to get into the fray with respect to the parents' rights legislation in Florida. Fine. Okay. But perhaps let's take a look at Disney. Disney have any special deals with the government? What are we doing with big corporations like Disney that decided to launch assaults on the legislative agenda of the Florida Republican Party, of the Florida governor? Ron DeSantis announced that part of a special legislative session that will be convened, it was originally to review the congressional redistricting map that he has promulgated. Now it will include reviewing all of these special taxing districts that have been created in the state of Florida over the years, including the Reedy Improvement District that, according to Matt Gaetz's calculation, saves Disney about $600 million a year in Florida state taxes.
Wow, that's a pretty big number.
Here's DeSantis.
We are expanding the call of what they are going to be considering this week. And so, yes, they will be considering the congressional map, but they also will be considering termination of all special districts that were enacted in Florida prior to 1968. And that includes the Reedy Creek Improvement District.
Yeah. And so you say, oh, well, this is DeSantis using the government in a retributive way against a political opponent. Well, you can read it that way, but here's the good news. The good news is they're looking at, as he said, districts created before 1968, how many of those that includes. But he's striking a blow against rent-seeking. He's striking a blow against corporate carve-outs for favored corporations in terms of the tax treatment at the state level, and that's consistent with conservative principles. So if he's evening the playing field, if he's putting a damper on rent-seeking behavior, which Illinois is the center of the Western world for.
I'm surprised we don't move Disney here to Chicago.
To its detriment. Well, yeah, right. Real tourist destination these days. Then that's a good thing. Starting from conservative principles, we're opposed to rent seeking. We shouldn't be in the business of granting special carve outs to powerful interests at the expense of less powerful interests. So this is an opportunity now that Disney has brought themselves to our attention. What about Disney? And what about how the law treats Disney and perhaps other big corporations in Florida? let's address this from a place of conservative principle, opposition to rent seeking. I love it.
312.
Absolutely the right response.
Yep. 312-642-5600, turnkey Debra answer line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
This is how you attach consequences to the left's politics. This is how, you know, you make them pay a price. How do you make them pay a price? How do you make them fear that there will be consequences to the unhinged gambits they undertake? Well, this is how you do it. This is a good example of how you do it. And it is perfectly legal. It's good public policy. And if it makes Disney pay $600 million more in Florida state taxes, relieving some of the tax burden on, you know, rank and file, middle income Florida families, then how could the left be opposed to that? I thought they want big corporations to pay their fair share. So it's a nice little threefer that Ron DeSantis has embarked upon obtaining with the help of state legislators in the special session upcoming.
Yeah, I just never knew that they had these tax breaks before and that they had their own fire department. I had no idea that that even existed.
Sure.
So when it says Disney World, it really is their own little world.
Yeah, it has been. And, of course, you know, the response that is being visited upon Florida Republicans, starting with DeSantis, of course. I mean, this is a good example of the timber and tenor of the response from the left to what they, of course, erroneously propagandize as the Don't Say Gay legislation.
As an American citizen, I find it truly disgusting that my country goes 40 steps forward just for people like the governor in Florida to take us 30 steps backwards. Don't say gay, Bill. Are you serious? Don't talk about what I went through and what my fellow gay LGBTQ plus community went through to get me here. Are you serious right now? Is the government sleeping? Why are they letting you do this? Isn't this the free country, the free world, freedom of speech? Don't say gay. That goes against freedom of speech. You cannot sit here and say being gay is not a choice when you're not gay. You don't know that. Now you want to make learning about our history illegal? You are literally making it harder for children to feel comfortable because conservative parents feel like it's not okay. They're not gay. It's not their place to talk about it. Stop being concerned with what other people like. This is disgusting.
That's a good example of what we were talking about a bit with COVID. You think you're going to reason with that gentleman?
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
No. So you go off and have your tantrum, whether it's over masks or over parental rights and K through 3 education. You go off and have your tantrum, and we're just going to carry on our business, and we're going to vote our shares in places like Florida. That's the way you do it. By the way, that gentleman, not the only example, center cut of the unhinged response to Florida, and I'm sure what will follow now, the rallying around Disney for corporate tax breaks. You know, the left protect Disney's corporate tax breaks in Florida.
Oh, yeah, it'll be a hashtag.
I can't wait for them to take that position. They'll have to rename it because, of course, that's not really consistent with their messaging, so they'll have to rename it of something like, let DeSantis shut down Disney or something. Jen.
Yeah. Let it go.
Exactly. Yeah. She was on a podcast.
Oh, again, she's podcasting everywhere, and she needs to go on vacation, I think.
She's
a little emotional, don't you think, Dan?
She's preparing for her transition. Probably in more ways than one, but I'm talking about the one to MSNBC. This is a podcast
this
of some leftist. She was the former CNN White House correspondent. Of course she was. And this is what Jen had to say about Ron and this same legislation that we've been discussing for the past several weeks.
This is a political wedge issue and an attempt to win a culture war. And they're doing that in a way that is harsh and cruel to a community of kids, especially. I'm going to get emotional about this issue because it's horrible. But But, you know, it's like kids who are bullied and they're just like all these leaders are taking steps to hurt them and hurt their lives and hurt their families. And you look at some of these laws in these states and it is going after parents who are in loving relationships who have kids. It's completely outrageous. Sorry. This is an issue that makes me completely crazy, but it is an issue that is a political wedge issue. It is not a reflection of where the country is.
That's not what makes you go completely crazy. Okay. All right. What do you have to say to Jen?
Yeah, she went on to say, you know, kids, you know, they're in kindergarten and Susie's got two dads instead of a mom and a dad, and we can't talk about it. So that's her interpretation of this, you know, this bill in Florida. And that's not what that's not what it is. But do you think she's read the bill? No, none of them have. Just fly off the handle and get emotional.
So Jen and the left, like that other hysterical person you heard from, good representation. They care more about kids in K through 3 in Florida than their parents do. They're better positioned to comment on how this is going to play out per the letter of the law now, and how parents will interact with teachers and kids with kids, you know, under the tutelage of their parents and teachers and administrators. They're better positioned. You know, it's an opportunity to emote. By the way, this is not where the country is. No, it actually is where the country is. It's still pretty much a commonsensical country. And the country is not where Jen and these leftist ghouls are promoting the mutilation of children and the elimination of women's sports and the blurring the lines between the sexes, blurring them, erasing them altogether. What am I talking about? And the sexualization of children, dare I say grooming, and be criticized, including by some on the right. Well, that's what it is. That's what so much of it is. Not everything, but that's what so much of it is. So to get Jen Psaki brought to a puddle of tears, you have to say, you know what, a sexuality-oriented curriculum is inappropriate for K through third graders. That's what's barbaric? Or is it what Jen and these leftist schools are doing with respect to sex in advance of their identitarian political visions? That's barbaric. That's barbaric. Which is it? I mean, these are, you know, you just have to sort of strip away the emotion and the hysterics and just put the question to people.
Got a text message. I think the government owns your kids now because parents are dumb. Okay. And then another one. Was that Primetime Stein on Center Cut?
No.
But it could Stein. Be Primetime Stein or his buddy.
They have to be, those guys, Alex Primetime Stein and Cassie Campbell, they have to be so over the top because the reality is very, very challenging to parody. This is why Cassidy Campbell, with his wailing at, like, every other line when he's got his 3 minutes before some city council in Texas, is so perfect. It's so pitch perfect because that's actually what's that's actually the communication content that you're getting from the left over and over again. Pick an issue. It's always the saving lives and the children. What about the children and so on and so forth? And these are the ghastly people that are in the business of turning kids into political activists and sexualizing them at from toddler forward, literally from toddler forward.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're supposed to be distracted by Psaki's crocodile tears so you don't actually think through the substance of her position. Actually process what this is really about. You're just supposed to get whipped into a frenzy. I mean, this is, again, create fear, then people suspend reason, then you have operational control, and now you can move a political agenda. Pretty straightforward, this linear process they go through on every issue. Phil and Darian.
Hey, good morning, guys. So Psaki is really disturbed about tearing up families. How about this, guys? For the last 2 years, her party has said, you either get this shot or you don't work anymore. Do you think that's tearing up any kind of families? What do you guys think?
Thanks, Phil.
That's true. I mean, until they end the vaccine mandate, this is far from over. In quarantine.
Jim and Crown Point.
First of all, the left labeled that bill the Don't Say Gay bill. I don't want anybody talking heterosexual sex or any kind of sex to a child. They don't need it. They don't even know what you're talking about to begin with. As for Disney, I hope they reassess every building on that place. I hate that place. It sickens me when I see an adult 60 years old with no children posting that he's in Disneyland.
Oh, it's
that
a subculture. I know.
It's garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Couples go there and they put on their Mickey Mouse hats and get married there. It's a whole different world, like furries. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think Jim and Crown Point is talking about couples. Oh. I think he's talking about predators, including the predators that we now have documentation on who've been employed by Disney over the years.
Right.
Chris Rufo tweeted about that, including all the child stars under the careful eye of Disney executives and talent agents and so forth who were abused over the years. You've heard on this show from Bella Thorne. We've told you the story about Ricky Garcia. So, yeah, go ahead. Raise your profile, Disney. You want to get into a political fight? Well, then let's strip it all bare and let's talk about what exactly Disney was versus what it is today. Let's have that conversation. I'm ready. So is DeSantis. Carl in Southern Indiana. Hey, Carl. Carl, Southern Indiana.
Hey, Carl.
Hello.
Hi.
This bill is not about Don't Say Gay. It's about not teaching sex. And I'm going to go with the alphabet. LGBTQF, whatever the rest of it, plus. Or heterosex or BDSM. And it shouldn't just go to third grade. It should go all the way up through sixth grade. When they start hitting puberty, yeah, you might want to start teaching them stuff. But guess what? At that age, up through 18, it's gender dysphoria. After the age of 18, the transgender and all that other stuff is a sexual fetish.
Carl, thanks. Cassandra, Northwest Side.
Hi. I agree with him. I think it's time to discuss that it is inappropriate for any adult to discuss sexual activity with a child. I think it is inappropriate for a school, a member of the educational establishment, to decide anything about sexual activity with a child. It is an inappropriate discussion. And this idea that it's okay, it's not okay anytime. Maybe in fourth grade, the biological reality of what happens to a male or a female body should be explained to a child. But this idea that, well, maybe we teach them something then, that's all we need to teach them. This is not appropriate. Any teacher who does this should be summarily fired. Any teacher who says, don't tell your parents, should be summarily fired.
Thanks for the call, Cassandra. And here's the thing, too, to this, you know, oh, you can't, people in loving relationships and so on and so forth. You know, here's a thought. Oh, a first grader to another first grader, another first grader has two dads, and that kid is talking to another kid, and the other kid doesn't understand it. So he asks the teacher, what's the deal with Johnny and his two dads? Here's something. Well, that's Johnny's the teacher. That's Johnny's family, and that's something that you should talk about with your parents. How about that? It does, rather than institutionalizing it as part of the curriculum so that you can bring in all the leftist LGBTQIA activist propaganda. How about something as simple as that? It's not your province. Back off.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So we move from one case study of the left to another, this time the media specifically. Libs of TikTok. This is a Twitter account. Very popular, now more than 800,000 followers, that just takes videos posted by leftists on TikTok and reposts them.
Yeah, and they've been taken off Twitter a few times and gotten back on, but I log on every day and watch Libs of TikTok just to see what's going out there, and then we play a lot of their videos here on the show, too.
And one of the things that we now know she... Right. has done so well over the last year and a half is expose what's going on in the classroom and who's in the classroom by posting videos from a lot of teachers, particularly teachers in primary grades, as well as diversity consultants and so forth. So after Libs of TikTok was suspended last week, she went on Tucker Carlson to explain why. She is not, and did so anonymously, and explained why she did so anonymously.
Well, I've gotten a few death threats. I get a ton of hate mail, and the left has been showing recently, you know, how they would treat people who disagreed with them. It's funny because some of the death threats, I mean, I've like reported it, and the people, they still have their accounts on Twitter. So, you know, you can threaten violence and still keep your account. But you can't play a video of what a leftist is themselves saying.
And this is Taylor Lorenz, who's a Amazon Post tech reporter. We played this a couple weeks ago when she was part of a MSNBC Gab Fest. A bunch of magpies got together to talk about how female journalists under 35 or under 40 are so harassed online. And Taylor Lorenz... got emotional talking about it. She suffers from PTSD.
I mean, welcome
Every
to the world.
Every single social tie, I had severe PTSD from this. I contemplated suicide. It got really bad. You feel like any little piece of information that gets out on you will be used by the worst people on the internet to destroy your life. And it's so isolating.
And terrifying.
It's horrifying. I'm so sorry. It's overwhelming. It's really hard.
And that's the same Taylor Lorenz that yesterday published a piece in the Amazon Post outing the account creator of Libs of TikTok, providing all sorts of detail about where she lived, posting a copy of her real estate license. That Taylor Lorenz, who also is all over social media, particularly Twitter, talking about how doxing people is wrong.
And what does she turn around and do? The same thing. And also, oh, they didn't even do that. The woman behind the Libs of TikTok, they're going after her family members. They found out who her, you know, distant relatives are and close relatives, and they're harassing them too. 312-642-5600, turnkey DEPRO answer line 64636, type in DA. Then a quick comment. My comment for Taylor Lorenz: grow up, get a thick skin. You know, you're in this business. Don't cry about it. And then you have PTSD. Of course, if you have an opinion, if you print a piece, someone's going to have a difference of opinion, and they might attack you. But that's part of the job.
So the Libs of TikTok account creator was on Tucker again last night to talk about the report that in the Amazon Post about her and Taylor Lorenz specifically.
Were you surprised that it was her who came after you personally and tried to destroy your life?
Yeah, I thought that was really humorous. It added a really nice layer of humor on top of the whole story. And I think that the fact that it was Taylor Lorenz, who is a known, you know, hypocrite, and she is known to dox people. The fact that it was her that was doing all this, I think it just helped people rally with support for me.
And they are rallying support for her. She's not going anywhere, she said. She's going to continue. Seth Dillon at the Babylon Bee announced that he's been in communication with her about ensuring that her work of scraping these videos and essentially reposting videos that people voluntarily post, maybe with a comment or two to frame what you're about to see. But it's their videos. She just takes and repurposes. It's like, oh, taking out of context, you're caricaturing the left. No, the left is caricaturing the left. That's what's happening. And they don't like it because it's so devastating when you see this parade of horribles on TikTok that this woman has identified, the videos that she takes and posts to her account. These people are out of their minds. I don't want anything to do with them. So it's effective, which is why she's being targeted. And the interesting thing about the story, another sort of nuance to the story, it's sort of wild, but again, it's a case study in the left and the left's infrastructure when it comes to targeting anybody who's effective on the right, like this woman. There's a former Twitter employee named Travis Brown who works for this something called Hate Speech Watch, which is a product of the Prototype Fund, which is funded by the German government, if you can follow that thread. But anyway, he helped Taylor Lorenz to identify who the account owner of Libs of TikTok was. So he helped in the outing of the Libs of TikTok account holder, this, you know, former Twitter employee, now operative, funded in at least in part by the German government. Here's Tucker Carlson on that aspect of the story.
In other words, what happened to the woman who runs Libs of TikTok, her life being destroyed, was not the work of Taylor Lorenz, the fearless journalist who cries on TV from a PTSD. No, it was a foreign intelligence operation designed to silence and intimidate an American citizen. Wait, is that legal? Did the Biden administration have any role in this particular intel op? Why is the German government trying to shut down an American Twitter account posting about American teachers? And since she was the willing recipient of this information from a foreign government designed to destroy an American citizen, why hasn't Taylor Lorenz at the very least registered under the Foreign Agent Registration Act, FARA? We seem to remember quite a bit of talk about this over the last few years. We think there was an impeachment trial over it. Someone went to prison because of it. But Taylor Lorenz can take information from a foreign government to crush an American citizen, clearly as part of an intel operation, and she's a journalist in good standing at Jeff Bezos' newspaper?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a stretch. Yeah, I think you'd have to connect more dots to suggest this, that she, Taylor Lorenz, was part of some foreign intel operation. But it is noteworthy that you have the German government funding this outfit that is funding the work of this Travis Brown and Hate Speech Watch, which is very much like Media Matters, the Southern Poverty Law Center, basically organizations that are just leftist hit squads dressed up as something more profound or public interested than they actually are. Fascinating story. Joe in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, thank you, Taylor Lorenz, for giving the right and the center the path on how to defeat the left. If she's going to want to kill herself just because somebody says something bad about her and disagrees, I am saying bad stuff about the left every single second of the day today.
All right, Joe.
I mean, just the hyperbole of, oh, woe is me. And, you know what's the furthest thing you could say? I thought about committing suicide.
She's the victim in the story.
Of course.
She's the victim in the story.
And
when she behaves in a way she decries when it's somebody that she likes being targeted, then we're supposed to just paper over that because, again, hypocrisy is the privilege associated with being a leftist. That's what we're supposed to understand. But, I mean, just why this is so effective. I mean, if you haven't familiarized yourself with Libs of TikTok, you may have, if you listen to the show unwittingly. Usually I I try to mention that it's from libs of TikTok. Give people credit where credit is due. But I mean, there's just so many, and the K through 12 piece, the left, which is really turning out to increasingly be the left's Achilles heel post pandemic. What's happening in K through 12? This is where she's been devastating. Just posting again, teachers who choose to go on TikTok and post stuff like this.
Hi, my name's Az and I'm a preschool teacher. So my classroom celebrates diversity. It's probably my favorite thing to teach. We usually use kids' books to talk about this kind of thing. Recently we started wearing pronoun pins, and the kids get to pick a new pronoun pin every day. We have some that pick like she, her every single day, and we have some that change it up. So diversity is really important in my class. So I recently realized that there's a whole lot of really amazing figureheads and people to look up to in this world who aren't white or straight or male or have what have you, and that we should learn a little bit more about these people.
Mm-hmm.
Pronoun pins? Yes, I remember this now.
That's preschool.
Preschool. Wow.
Another preschool teacher, another lib of TikTok. This equity, diverse, you know, this Dizar in the Tahoma, Washington, in a Tahoma, Washington school district.
Here's some things that you need to know about me. Number one, if you are a person of whiteness, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck about your feelings. I don't give a fuck.
Frack.
Think that your place is in the world. You too can achieve the American dream if only you work hard enough to conform to society's norms. And by society, I mean white supremacy.
White supremacy. So breathy. So woke. If she was my teacher, I would walk out.
And she's running your teachers through the training regimen. At the higher education level, University of New Hampshire, a Zoom call. This professor you're about to hear with a bunch of his colleagues talking about adults who have sexual relationships with kids.
Oh, great.
Also, if young people are initiating sexual activities with adults or enthusiastically involved, we can't be effective in working with them if we assume that all such relationships start with a predatory or criminally inclined adult.
Good Lord.
As we're seeing in the discussion, young people bridle at being forced into this box of being seen as being the victim of a predator. And so there are reasons for learning about what the dynamics are and how to talk about them so that we can better help the young people who are in these situations.
That's right. Promoting pedophilia.
Yeah. That's a very room temperature argument in favor of repealing all statutory rape laws. Who's in favor of that? Raise your hand. So that's what's going on in the thinking sciences at the University of New Hampshire. And, you know, when you have this sort of influence that this gets out as representative of a certain worldview, and these people are representative of a certain worldview, and I think for most commonsensical people that don't consume political content on a routine basis, but, you know, especially videos get shared and distributed, boy, this is really damaging to the left. Again, it is her effectiveness and the presentation of people in their own words that they voluntarily offer for public consumption, that is just devastating to the left. We had one here locally. I mean, this is libs of TikTok is why former Glenbard North music teacher Scott Grigoletto is a former Glenbard North music teacher.
You're playing? Are you playing? No, I'm not. Oh, otherwise, I will call the police. Oh, I'm serious.
I hear my
idea. Yeah, okay.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I am serious, man.
Oh,
I have had enough of it. I knew you were going to take off your mask the moment I turned the corner. So enjoy BIA.
What's that?
That's in school suspension where you have to sit in a room with the military guy all day because you're a piece of
Jack at the corner.
Yeah, because he took his mask off in the hallway and he called him a piece of
excrement, right. And now he gone.
as he should be.
I mean, it's just it's effectiveness. And this is all encouraging what Ron DeSantis is doing and Florida Republicans are doing vis-a-vis Disney. The rallying around libs of TikTok and the Babylon Bee. I mean, these really are some of the frontline warriors in the culture war. And frankly, the war for our first freedoms in this country as enshrined in the Constitution. So take notice of them, follow them, support them, promote them. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Craig Robinson is Michelle Obama's brother. His wife, Kelly Robinson, the two of them live up in Milwaukee. They got two kids in the primary grades that are at the prestigious university school in Milwaukee. Oh, well, they were until their two kids got bounced because mom and dad, according to the school, have behaved in a disrespectful and demeaning manner. Well, now mom and dad have filed suit against the school. I don't know exactly what the nature of their complaint is. They don't have a constitutional right to send their kids to a particular private school. But
and it's a private school, and they can do what they want.
They're alleging all sorts of, well, racial stereotyping and the like. Here's, and of course they went on for one of those softball interviews where they're prompted to give their rehearsed lines by Robin Roberts on Good Morning America. This was about the quality of the Jussie Smollett interview Robin Roberts did. Craig Robinson explaining what happened from his perspective.
Well, Robin, and thanks for having us on, and congratulations on your 20 years with GMA.
Yeah.
You know, this all started as a lot of parents.
Good to see you, old friend.
We heard what was going on in the classroom because of COVID, and there were repeated use of racial and ethnic stereotypes that were in actual assignments. The use of the word plantation and things of that nature. In addition to the racial and ethnic stereotypes, there was an insensitivity to socioeconomic status. And as well as a disregard for the children who weren't physically in the classroom. And all of this we found, we thought, okay, maybe we'll have a communication with them and give them some suggestions. And once we gave them those suggestions and had a little bit of a back and forth, they summarily dismissed our young children, retaliating against them because of the issues that we brought up.
Mm-hmm. What I find interesting about that offering is racial stereotypes. They use the word plantation. What does that mean? In what context?
Right. In what context? Because, of course, they were watching their kids who are aged or who were the age of 9 and 11 at the time. They were watching them, you know, during COVID lockdowns and watching them being taught on Zoom.
Well, what is that? What is racial stereotypes like? What do you mean? They use the word plantation. Well, how is that evidence of racial stereotype? Give me more. Insensitivity to socioeconomic status. What does that mean? I mean, it's all the gobbledygook phraseology of the left. So this is where his wife, Kelly, had to chime in and share her stories to try to buttress this case that they're making against the school.
And after you started talking about this and accused the school of bias, Kelly, did you hear from other parents and former students?
Yes, we did, Robin. In fact, this story resonated with many families in the community, and former University School of Milwaukee families reached out to us, and we were not aware initially of how far-reaching this was, and we heard stories of other families being retaliated against. We also heard about other biases that have been shared over the years, and while we heard biases, and what we would like to point out is the egregious nature in which they handled this with us and with our young boys. But one of the stories that we weren't made aware of was that just as recent as 10 years ago, the University School of Milwaukee had in their fourth grade curriculum that students reenacted the Underground Railroad, and students dressed up as slaves and ran through the school in the dark. And the teachers were actually the slave masters who captured these students. And hearing these stories and understanding the pain that other families have gone through are one of the reasons why we wanted to come forward with this story. And knowing how one of the other stories that we heard was about how the black students seem to get more harsh punishments than white counterparts. In particular, a student using the N-word may be considered a good student or come from a good family, and their punishment is not as harsh as other students, in particular students of color.
Ooh, there's a lot to unpack there.
Not really. A student allegedly uses the N-word versus the punishment versus a student of color. That sounds like a cliched caricature of what happens at some elite private school. So what do you mean?
I was talking about the the assignment of allegedly, you know.
Yeah, well, that's one. She had two stories. So let's take them in reverse order. What do you mean? What was the punishment for a kid who used the N-word? Be specific. And what was what are you comparing it to?
Well, the reporter didn't ask that question because they're all buddies. And I'm sure there was parameters to the interview before it began, so might never know what the truth is on that.
This Underground Railroad reenactment that she alleges, she's as recently as 10 years ago. Well, let's say that it was as cringeworthy as you're describing. It was also 10 years ago. What does that have to do with the school today? What are you saying about the school today?
Does it affect your children?
You're right. You weren't there and your kids weren't there. You hear from other parents the pain and so on and so forth. It sounds to me like a bunch of leftist parents getting together basically saying that the school is not identitarian enough. They're open to our identitarian politics, but they're not adopting our identitarian politics into their curriculum quickly enough. Is that what it sounds like to you?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. The school said that they were model students, calling them portraits of a graduate, but they're going to have to graduate somewhere else.
Well, so what? I mean, they're kicked out because of the parents, because they can't, because the family doesn't apparently, according to the school, respect the school, and they can't interact with the school in a productive manner. That's the school's position, to the extent they've commented so far. I don't know the truth of that, but yeah, this like retaliating against my kids. No, I mean it's unfortunately, your kids have to suffer. But why do you want them at that school anyway if it's so bad?
Exactly. That's bingo right there. Because if they knew about that assignment beforehand, but you still sent your kids there. I mean, we don't know if they did or not. But Greg Robinson said that.
Forget about the assignment. They want their kids in that school right now. Forget about what happened 10 years ago. You're saying you want your kids in that school right now. You're filing suit saying they were the victims of a retaliation because you raised issues of bias. So you want your kids in the school or you don't? What's the remedy you're seeking?
And then they also use the B word, you know, bullying.
Now the tall black guy can't advocate for his kids without being called a bully.
And that's when, you know, he spoke to the local ABC station in Milwaukee, too. That's what he told that reporter.
Yeah.
Didn't get more in depth with them either.
Uh-huh. Right.
But she did ask and they said, we can't comment.
So Kelly also goes on to say how involved she was. And, you know, this is supposed to credentialize her. To me, I read it. I hear it differently. And by the way, I don't know much about the University School in Milwaukee. I'm not flacking for it. Most of these elite private schools are awful these days. So I'm certainly not giving either side the benefit of the doubt. But since I only have one side talking, I'm trying to sort of decipher what these two identitarians, clearly identitarians, are actually saying.
I've always been an involved parent at the school, and they appreciated that. I worked closely with teachers. Uh-huh. I was a part of the classroom in helping the teachers in previous years, not last year, but we were well respected in the community. I was a very active participant in the Parents Association as well as a middle school and lower school advisory. Advisory Council. So this was not something that was ever expected, and we were never disrespectful. I have a background in education. I appreciate the work that teachers have done, especially during the pandemic.
Well, the head of the school, Steve Hancock, told the ABC affiliate, "We cannot and will not tolerate persistently disrespectful, bullying, or harassing behavior directed at our devoted and hardworking teachers and administrators."
Yeah, Kelly, their wifey, is saying how involved she was. Yeah, I bet she was really involved. And I bet that may be where some of the problems started, about her level of involvement. And I'm all for parental involvement, but perhaps it was parental involvement akin to what I was suggesting. You need to do this, and you need to do that, and we need to have more DEI consultants, and we need to talk about Black Lives Matter and so on and so forth. We need to have a Black Lives Matter week like so many other schools, public and private in the country. I don't know if they do or not. I'm just using that as an example. I mean, it just sounds to me like this is a political disagreement that is being dressed up into, oh, we were trying to be constructive and identify bias and promote a more racially harmonious school. Was there really a problem based on what they provided in that 10 minutes with Robin Roberts, the lack of specificity? And as I said, the weasel leftist phrases, I'm just not buying it. I don't know. It just strikes me as a political disagreement, probably the left versus the left. The leftist institution just isn't going fast enough for these leftist hyper-political parents.
It sounded like, excuse me, the Robinsons were, as you said, repeatedly engaging in disrespectful and demanding communications with and about our teachers and administrators. That's what Steve Hancock, the head of the school, also told the ABC affiliate in Wisconsin. So it was, maybe they drop one of those, "Don't you know who I am?"
Oh,
they could have, I'm sure.
I'm sure the school knows who he is.
Right. I mean, he's the brother-in-law of Barack Obama. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they know. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, maybe the school actually is telling them to go pound sand because they have a traditional curriculum and they're not interested in doing the identitarian politics masquerading as K through 12 education that so many schools are doing. That's a hopeful note. I don't know. So as I said, I'm sort of neutral here, except to the extent that you can read between the lines of what Mr. and Mrs. Robinson are communicating. I think if you've heard enough from the left, it's pretty straightforward what they're trying to do.
And he did admit to WISN that, you know, Craig Robinson said that he did share and offer suggestions about assignments.
Which is fine.
Yeah. That's fine. But if they're not going to, then get your kid to another school or maybe try public schools.
No,
huh?
I mean, we hold him to the same parent empowerment that we suggest for every parent in every other school. You want to make curriculum suggestions? You got a question about curriculum? Absolutely. Mr. Robinson, Mrs. Robinson should ask a question, make a proposal. That's fine. I got no problem with that. Not at all. But I don't think that's what's at play here, is my point. I think they're soft pedaling what's really at play between them and the school. And as I said, my spidey sense would tell me it's really center left versus hard identitarian left. It's not like, you know, it's MAGA country up there at the university school in Milwaukee.
No.
They harbor some ill will towards, Michelle and Barack or something like that. I don't think that's what's going on. I think this is mainly about the navel gazing at identitarianism of Mr. and Mrs. Robinson, and they don't like being told no. And you see that a lot at private schools in all sorts of political directions. People that are not used to being told no. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Amy, a text from the Amish texter about our conversation about the Robinson family up there at University School of Milwaukee. I'm normally not in favor of this, but it sounds like Merrick Garland needs to send the FBI to that school in Milwaukee to investigate those terrorist parents. That's pretty good.
That's a good one. All right, we have another example of the left being out of their mind. Did you see this headline yesterday? I thought it was a joke. A DJ accused of wearing blackface turns out to be black. His name is DJ Coco Kim Hunter, and he...
in Scottsdale.
Yeah, in Scottsdale, Arizona, April 9th. He was at a fundraiser for an elementary school there, and two attendees, Dan, they weren't dancing. They were eyeballing him, and they thought that he was wearing blackface. Right. And so his boss called him a few days after the event and said that, you know, these two people have filed a complaint against you. And the funny part of it is that they said, well, a black person being in blackface is problematic. No, it was a 70s disco fundraiser, and he dressed up for it, and he didn't put any paint on his face, ladies.
So, at the event, it was a 70s/disco theme. I'm in my disco gear. You know, I'm 56 years old, so I know that era right there. So I'm like, let's do it. Let's make it happen. Listen, I even took my roller skates, my personalized roller skates. I was so ready. My bell bottoms, all that stuff. Played music all night long. 200, 300, 400 people on the dance floor, and I'm trying to get them off and all. They won't leave. It was that kind of energy in there.
So the complaint to the school, the PTA president responded, how is it culturally unaware to hire a black man to be our DJ? And then these identitarian goons, I never said that it was a white person in blackface. It could have been a black person in blackface because it looked like a darker makeup than a black person. So now you have white people talking about the pigment of black people's skin as to whether or not they're black enough to be the black DJ at a school event. This is how crazy the identitarian left is.
Yeah, and the accuser has apologized, but not directly to him. But he gets to keep his job, so that's good.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the big guy, President Biden, has reportedly, according to The Hill, thehill.com, told Obama that he is running again. But the big question, will the Easter Bunny let him run again?
I know, I still, that's going to indelibly etched in my mind, that Easter Bunny running interference between him and the crowd and some reporters. I mean, people were texting the show, too, saying Obama was in the Easter Bunny suit.
Well, the Easter Bunny was later revealed to not be Obama, but yes, it could have been. Could have, you know, that's a fair guess. For more on the Easter Bunny question, pleased to be joined by John Hinderaker, president of the Center of the American Experiment, contributor to powerlineblog.com. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you, Dan.
So Biden, the big guy running again, you know, a lot of people don't think still that he survives his first term, much less another one.
Well, that's what I think, Dan. I mean, what's the over-under, right? I mean, the Democrats clearly want to get past the midterms pretending that everything is okay. And so we're not going to see any change until then. But, you know, this incident with the Easter Bunny is a classic because it's just so funny visually to see the Easter Bunny hustling him away before he blurts out something that'll make news. But, you know, Joe Biden can hardly make a public appearance without producing this kind of video. The last one before the Easter Bunny, it was when he finished his speech and he turns around, you know, to side and he's going to shake hands with somebody, puts his hand out, there's no one there. Then he turns his back on the audience and he wanders around like he has no idea where he is. And everybody was mocking that, of course, but the so-called fact checkers came in and said, no, you're if you're looking very carefully from different angles, he was really gesturing toward the crowd.
Gesturing, of course.
I don't know what they're going to say about the Easter Bunny.
I thought they were going to say the Easter Bunny was in an invisible suit. And so you just couldn't see the Easter Bunny shaking his hand back.
But to your point, Dan, the idea that Joe Biden is going to be the nominee in 2024, I think, is a fantasy. And of course, then the question is, let's assume that he lives and is at least semi-functional until 2024. Then what are they going to do? I think it's hard for them to drop Kamala Harris. isn't it? I mean, she's the heir apparent as vice president. I think they're in a real bind.
Not if they want to win. It's not hard for them to drop Kamala Harris.
Well, that's the problem, though, Dan. I mean, number one, I think it does create some issues because despite everything, she does have her, you know, she has some adherents. But then who are they going to run? Pete Buttigieg? I mean, his is the next name that you tend to hear. And the idea that Pete Buttigieg is a serious candidate for the presidency, again, I think is just a fantasy.
Well, if they were smart and, you know, and there are people over there that are a little bit more politically savvy than to suggest a Kamala or a Mayor Pete, there are other players on their landscape that could be more compelling. I mean, I think of like a, not that I'm a fan, but I mean, just from their perspective and their electoral interests, somebody like a Jared Polis from Colorado, the governor there, would be a much better play. And so I would think that they would be able to orchestrate, the Obama people would be able to orchestrate that if they wanted to, the way they orchestrated the Biden campaign.
Well, you may be right, Dan. And I don't, I mean, I've written that there's no way in the world that Joe Biden is the Democratic nominee in 2024. One of the funny things about that, though, is that apparently the same reports that say that he's told Obama and others he's running in the next election, they also say that he has explained that he's the only one who can beat Trump.
Yeah, he said earlier in the week. Right. Yeah, he's itching to run against. He'd be very fortunate to run against Trump in 2024.
Yeah.
And it's very much Adam Kinzinger is very excited. He would love to run against Trump in 2024. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see both counts. If Trump is going to be the Republican nominee, if he's going to run again, and if he does, probably be the Republican nominee, I would love to see a Kinzinger primary as a tune-up to a Biden general.
It would be pretty entertaining. But, you know, you probably are aware, Dan, as I've said many times, I mean, I think it's time to end the gerontocracy. I think Donald Trump was a very good president. I think he was our best president since Reagan. I think he's done a lot for the country. I don't want him to run again in 2024.
Well, why not?
Well, because I'm afraid he'd lose. That's why. And I also think we want to have a president who's not 80 years old in the middle of his term. But I don't think voters want to look back, Dan. I think voters want to look forward. And I don't think Trump can get over the fact that he was robbed or thinks he was robbed in 2020. And in 2024, there are going to be serious issues on the table. I mean, inflation, the economy, international affairs are going to continue to be troubled, as well as these kind of bizarre cultural issues that we see all around us, the collapse of American education and so on. Voters are not interested in looking back and refighting the last election. I think it's time for the Republicans to move forward instead of backward. And my personal favorite is Ron DeSantis.
Right.
Will be, I think, in his mid-40s in 2024, which sounds great to me after living through the senility that we've seen, frankly, from Joe Biden.
So, John, who do you think would be a good running mate, you know, looking forward, if you could pick DeSantis's running mate? Do you see a Nikki Haley, possibly?
Well, you know, maybe. I mean, certainly she's got her fans. I'm probably a little bigger fan of a Kristi Noem than a Nikki Haley. I think she's more of a solid conservative and an excellent, excellent retail politician, campaigner. I think the Republicans have got a lot of good potential candidates, unlike, frankly, the Democrats. But I'm afraid that if Trump is the nominee, the whole election is all about Donald Trump. And we need it to be about the issues. Because as we're talking about the issues, the Republican is going to win.
Right.
Yeah, although, I mean, to give Trump some credit here and to make the case for him just for the sake of this discussion, I mean, he's going to be in a strong position coming out of what looks to be a seismic shift in power in the midterms, and he'll be able to take some credit for that. In addition, he has a really strong I told you so argument across almost every issue where his record was a significant improvement over the previous 8 years, we have lost ground under Biden. And so he has that, you know, if we would have continued to do what I had started to doing in term one, then we would be in a much better place by the end of term two. And now, you know, we can get there if I'm given another opportunity. I mean, that's a pretty strong case. The other thing he's going to look at, too, is polling that shows him in a hypothetical matchup with Biden or potentially some of these other candidates and in a pretty strong position right now as well.
Well, what you say is true. I would add something to it. Trump would have been reelected if it hadn't been for COVID. He was cruising along toward victory on a platform of peace and prosperity. It was COVID that disrupted that. I think that's another issue where he can look back and say, this was all nonsense, blaming COVID on him. Remember how Biden, whatever the total number of alleged COVID deaths was at the time, Biden said they were all Trump's fault. Right. And if he was president, that'd be the end of COVID. Well, obviously, we all know how that turned out.
Right. But it was, don't you think it was Trump's attitude towards COVID, not his response to COVID, that cost him the election?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure it was either one. I think that sometimes a sitting president just gets blamed for things that, a drought, the crops don't grow. I mean, I'm not sure how many people seriously thought that it was his fault. I think it was just, frankly, a natural disaster that happened to come along near the end of his term, in which the other side opportunistically blamed on him.
Something that is not a natural disaster, this is completely self-inflicted, is what's happening at the border. And it's a problem for the left. They feel it to be a problem when you have people like Bill Galston writing in the Wall Street Journal that Biden needs to take a leadership role in the border crisis, when you have incumbent Dem senators in swing states like Cortez,
like Arizona,
Cortez Mastro in Nevada, even doing a complete 180 on Title 42 and what's happening at the border. And we've got data in just yesterday, 18 days into April, 221,000 total encounters, the highest in 20 years. That was the March number. 1.2 million illegals encountered by border security since October 1st. I mean, this is something that even Dems in swing states are having to now reverse course on.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Dan. And of course, this is one of the reasons why we're going to see a red wave in November. I saw some polling just yesterday, though, indicating that Republicans and independents are up in arms about the border, as they should be. We all should be. Democrats apparently are not. This whole open borders ideology, there's no such thing as the United States of America. We're not a nation. We're just a place. And anybody that wants to come here, come one, come all, sign up for welfare.
A person can't be illegal, John. A person can't be illegal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. No such thing as an illegal person. That seems to be the view that's held by most Democrats. I think Biden is locked into his disastrous border policies by the ideology that dominates his party. And I don't think he's going to be able to do anything between now and November, or really wants to do anything different between now and November. And again, this is going to be, part of the reason for the red wave.
We also have, the continuing fallout in terms of what COVID wrought on the nation, the COVID lockdown policies, the school shutdowns, the mask wearing, all of these ineffectual to destructive policies. But then also movements spawned and spurred by the left. We mentioned border. How about the race hustle and Black Lives Matter? Not just in terms of the financial chicanery that its new Marxist founders are up to with all the corporate cash they got, but also just the devastating impact of violence on disproportionately black families in this country. Number of black murders far higher than whites in 2020. 7,000 white people murdered that year, and nearly 10,000 blacks murdered that year compared to whites, even though, of course, black Americans are represent one-fifth of the population that white Americans represent in terms of the overall population. So, I mean, just, Black Lives Matter, the decarceration, non-prosecution, prosecutors, the violence issue, that does not accrue to the benefit of Biden and the new Marxists in D.C., and you're seeing that in the polling, too, with minorities fleeing Biden.
Well, you're absolutely right, Dan. Defund the police was never the mantra in black neighborhoods. Defund the police was a campaign mounted by white liberals. And we're seeing the consequences of the George Floyd riots, of the pullback in policing, of the attacks on law enforcement across the country. As you know, Dan, I live in a suburb of Minneapolis. Yeah. And you know, the Democrats love to talk about January 6th, and I always say, "Well, show me the 2 miles of buildings that got burned down by those protesters." I mean, come to Minneapolis, and I'll show you 2 miles of one of the major streets burned to the ground, including a precinct police station by the George Floyd rioters. And this violence lies squarely at the door of the left. And you're right. I think in November we're going to see a lot of blacks voting Republican, and we're going to see a huge number of Hispanics voting Republican.
Well, I'm curious about that $90 million that was collected largely from corporations. Who's in charge of that money, and where did it go?
I've written about this on Powerline, Amy, as you know, and I mean, the whole BLM, this umbrella organization, BLM, Global Network Foundation, that by their own account brought in $90 million, mostly from corporate America. Where did it go? No one knows the answer to that question, because they are operating completely illegally and in the dark, and they haven't even filed a Form 990, which is an IRS form that every nonprofit in America files. You've got to report how much did you raise, what did you spend it on, what programs did you spend it on, and the salaries of your chief employees. And they haven't filed one. And one of their founders has gone on record in front of a crowd saying, "This is triggering. It's triggering to me."
The IRS law has been unsafe. IRS law has been weaponized against Black Lives Matter and Patrice Cullors.
Yeah, I feel unsafe because they want me to file a form. I mean, it's so ridiculous. And now they've been banned from further fundraising in a number of states, including California. So it turns out the whole BLM thing was just a fraud from the beginning.
He is John Hinderaker, president of the Center of the American Experiment, contributor to Powerline Blog, powerlineblog.com. John, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Have a great day.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Oh. All right. Cassidy Campbell,
one of
these city council performance artists, in front of the, let me set the scene here, in front of the Frisco, Texas City Council for public comment. He's got a black do-rag on. He's got a Black Lives Matter t-shirt on.
Oh, wow.
And he offered this.
Uh-oh. What up, pimp? So, it's tax season right now. First of all, I just want to give a shout-out to my kids. It's the only time of the year I ever claim my kids. You feel? But, yeah, shout-out to them. You feel me? What I was going to say was, so I just got my ancestry DNA test back, and I'm 2% black. The reason I'm up here today is because y'all trifling, and we need to honor my homie George Floyd, who now been sober 2 years, and this is finna be called the Say His Name Bill. All right? So this is my ancestry DNA test, if y'all don't believe me, 2%. So first of all, let's take a knee to the Pledge of Allegiance of George Floyd while I recite the pledge. Everybody take a knee, please. I pledge allegiance to George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement and the causes for which they stand. One sentence. I can't breathe with methamphetamine and fentanyl for all. Let's get into it now.
Oh my God.
Nobody took a knee, I see. I guess y'all racist.
Oh.
Y'all was taking a knee back in 2020, though. Am I the only one still taking knees? So, this is what's finna be on the bill, though, which will be for kindergarten through 12th grade for the month of April. So, first of all, white kids need to hold their breath for 8 minutes every day.
Oh, my God.
White kids have to do the black kids' schoolwork. White kids have to give black kids their lunch money, or else they'll go to the principal's office. Everyone will watch George Floyd's sex tape and write an essay on it. Every Veterans Day, we will honor George Floyd as he served as a security guard for the Salvation Army. Kids can receive bonus points in the classroom if they hold a pregnant woman at gunpoint. Kids can receive bonus points for using counterfeit $20 bills. Kids can receive bonus points if they record themselves having a fentanyl overdose and live. Students should purposely provoke the police because they're racist and try their best to receive police brutality and be celebrated by BLM with a peaceful protest.
A city council member interrupted him towards the end and said, do we have to listen to any more of this? And the attorney just said, let him finish or whatever. We can adjourn to executive session after this if you want. I think they're going to need to towel off after that Cassidy Campbell offering.
He's okay. Smoking a cigar, too.
It's gonna start getting a little saucy down there at those Texas City Council meetings, those municipal meetings that Cassidy and Alex Stein are going to, I'm telling you.
And when he talked about his kid, he opened up a wallet full of like 17 kids and has a big, huge gold watch on. Oh, okay.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So here's what I see the Biden administration doing. We're going to have double-digit inflation for some time because the Fed, politicized as it is. And by the way, good graphic that was making its rounds yesterday about how many members of the Fed Board of Governors have had no experience in the real world. They've been lifers at the Fed. Because they are not going to crash the equity markets, they're not going to be as aggressive with interest rate hikes as their rhetoric so indicates. So they're going to do this dance. I mean, there's no way they thread the needle to unwind all that has been wound over the last decade, and particularly the last 24 months. So we're going to keep up the transfer payments. It's sort of backdoor Cloward Piven. This is what we have going on. We talked a little bit about yesterday with the extension of the public health emergency by HHS Secretary Becerra, so that people can continue to get food stamps and not have to worry about any limitations imposed by a work requirement. 2.5 million more Americans on food stamps right now than before the pandemic.
And there's so many jobs out there available.
1.8 jobs for every person unemployed. So we're going to continue the transfer payments, ramp them up. We'll do the more college loan forgiveness, as Biden so indicated yesterday, another 40,000 people under review for student loan forgiveness. That's another buy-off.
Yeah.
So because middle and lower middle income people are going to feel the crunch of price hikes at the pump, at the grocery store, we got to give them more government money to keep them satiated, keep them in the fold. And then meanwhile, in a high inflation environment, so long as you're still getting returns in the stock market, you're going to satisfy the high-income individuals who are disproportionately left by, number one, getting them returns for their investments. Number two, helping them inflate their way out of their mortgage payments. And there's your coalition. That's how you keep it together. You continue to do serious structural harm to the economy and to America's future and to the prospects of growth. But politically, this is all you can do if you want to try to minimize the damage that's coming in 22 and beyond. That's my theory.
Let's see, as usual.
Let's see if Steve Moore agrees. Steve, yes. Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, economist, GovZilla author. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning. What do you think about my theory?
Well, before I get to your theory, I just want to mention one thing. A big, big deal in the Wall Street Journal this morning. I don't know if you already mentioned it, Dan, but they did an analysis of the tax cut, which we did under Trump. And as you know, Larry Kudlow and I helped write that tax plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you saw it.
Record corporate receipts.
They discovered, the corporate receipts were higher. Let me put this very simply, folks. we had a 35% corporate tax rate. We cut that rate to 21%, saying that we could spring in, you know, investment and more jobs and more profits. And guess what? At the 21% tax rate, according to the Wall Street Journal today, we're getting more revenues than we were at 35%. That's called the Laffer curve, guys, and it actually works in this case. And so it's an amazing story. Now, on your why does Biden want to raise the rate back up to 28%? That makes no sense, right? We're getting more revenue at 21%, and he wants to raise the rate up. Yeah, I think you nailed it, my friend. I mean, we are now paying people not to work through these expanded welfare programs. And, you know, Amy, you're exactly right. You pay people not to work, and it's going to be harder and harder and harder to get people to come back on the job. It's that simple. Now, why are we still paying when we have 10 million job openings today? Why are we paying all these supplemental welfare benefits? It makes no sense.
Well, it doesn't make any economic sense, but it makes political sense, and that's what people have to understand.
We're
looking
at, you know, it makes political sense. It's killing the economy. You talk to any small business from all the way from Sacramento to Maine, and they will tell you they cannot get their workers back on the job because people are getting unemployment benefits, food stamps, student loan forgiveness, free cash benefits, this, that, the other thing. And, you know, the left loves to talk about fairness. What's fair? What's fair? The guy who's working 40 hours a week sometimes is making less money than the guy sitting on the couch.
Yeah, but if it's not clear to some small business owners at this point, I don't know what will make it clear, you're not part of their political constituency. They don't care.
That's true.
And so we're talking about economics when the questions they're asking are all political ones, not economic ones.
Well, sure, but look, small businesses are the backbone of our economy. About half the people listening to this show, you know, are people who own and operate small businesses. They employ 60% of our workers. Without small businesses, we don't have an economy. So why do you want to punish these small businesses? Now, here's their plan. See, it's a little even more sinister than you were suggesting, Dan. They want to raise the minimum wage to $20 an hour, and you know, all these, you know, forced increases in wages and salaries. Of course, these are people who've never run a business before, so they know nothing about how to meet a payroll. And so what they think is, we'll give all these people these free benefits. You know, you can make as up to, you know, $20, $25 an hour in free benefits, and that will force businesses to raise their wages. Mm-hmm. Of course, they don't understand that a lot of these businesses don't have these, you know, big profit margins. They can't run deficits like the federal government can. And it doesn't work for small business. They can't afford to pay people $22, $25. Some cases they can, but a lot of cases they can't. So you're just going to bankrupt small businesses with this plan.
So then the flip side of this is to say, okay, so we understand what the left is doing. Now the question becomes, okay, well, Rick Scott, Kevin McCarthy, erstwhile presidential aspirants for 2024, if you were put in charge tomorrow, what would you do? Because the predicament is likely to be this bad but certainly November and probably 24 in going into 24. So what would you do on these matters?
Well, don't you understand, Dan? I mean, you're not paying attention. This is transitory, right?
Yeah.
It's all transitory. It's all right. No way. I don't.
Yeah. So we know that's not true. I mean, it is. It's, you know, Republicans have to have a policy answer, too. Republicans have to have a policy answer. So if you were advising Rick Scott and Kevin McCarthy, what is it?
Okay, the policy answer is right out of the gate, we have to do three things. Number one, we have to make the Trump tax cuts permanent. They work. They cost a great economic revival. We're getting more revenues. So let's make those tax cuts permanent. Number two, we have to immediately cut government spending across the board, every agency, by 10%. Now, agencies got 30, 40% increases in their budget, so they could easily absorb a reduction in spending. The match that lit the forest fire of this 8.5% inflation, which, as you say, may be going to double digits, was all this runaway spending. If you don't rein in the government spending, I don't think that there's many other options available. The other thing we have to do is go back to the Trump energy policy of producing our oil, our gas, our coal, everything we've got, building the pipelines, building the LNG terminals, making sure they will have the infrastructure to be the energy dominant country. If we did those three things, I think inflation would go away. Now, here's the problem, Dan. What do you think are the chances that Joe Biden would do any of those things?
Well, he's not going to do any of those things. But I mean, that the point is to say not what he's what not what we know he won't yeah. do, no, but what Republicans are offering in terms of the path forward.
Dan and Amy, here's the problem. I hate to tell you this. I don't want to burst your bubble. Republicans don't want to cut spending either.
Yeah, well, I know.
Trump didn't.
I know. But this is this see to me that and this can't get lost in the zeitgeist to remove Pelosi and Schumer and Biden. I'm obviously all for that. But you know, this is the time where you need to pin people down. And on the spending piece, you know, the 10% across the board, okay, fine. But here's something. Hey, Rick Scott, I mean, I have no hope for Mitch McConnell, so I'm treating Rick Scott as he's the Senate Majority Leader. Rick Scott, Kevin McCarthy, tell me one agency, one line item that you will zero out. Don't give me 48 pages of, you know, eliminate the Department of Education, Department of Energy, Department of Commerce, defund NPR, defund the arts, NEA. Tell me one thing that you as a caucus leader are going to die on a hill to zero out as an indication to the world that you're serious about reducing the size and scope of government. Just one thing that we know that we can measure you by. How do you want us to measure you? One thing.
Gosh, how about getting rid of, you know, the foreign aid? How about getting rid of Legal Services Corporation?
Sure, I know. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I could go on. How about
I know you could.
Why are we paying people $50 every time they go on a, you know, New York subway car? I mean, there's so much waste in the budget. That's why I think just doing an across-the-board cut is the best way to do it. There's not a single agency in Washington right now that isn't overflowing with money. I mean, all right. We've done is we've spent $4 trillion in all these COVID relief measures. The budgets of these agencies is overflowing with money. The states, I mean, we gave the states all this money. The states should be cutting their spending and cutting their taxes too. Is there going to be a tax cut in Illinois? I mean, Illinois, we've given Illinois $3 billion.
No, he's freezing gas tax and other things.
He's freezing.
And we get a rebate we get a rebate of $150 for our property taxes.
And
ooh,
ridiculous.
Give me a break. That's just, you know, going downtown for an evening for parking and getting food. But I wanted to ask you about the student loan forgiveness because I hang out with a lot of children because I have children. They are under the impression that their student loans, because, you know, going to places like Tulane or Georgia Tech is near $80,000 a year.
Right. Yeah.
They think that if they vote for Bernie Sanders or if Bernie dies, AOC's in charge.
It'll be free.
Student loan forgiveness is going to happen.
Yeah. Well, Kyle, they want to make college free. So, you know, that is going to make you think college is expensive now. You know,
if they have
the government pay for it all, you're going to have tuition of $100,000 a year. Every time we've expanded all of these student aid programs, which is just a big giveaway to the big, you know, universities. Which are the most, they make the federal government look, you know, lean and efficient in comparison. This is not the solution. And it is not fair. I say this so many times on your show. It is not fair to the people who did pay off their student loans to have to then pay more taxes for the deadbeats who didn't. And yes, I use the word deadbeat. If you took out a loan and you didn't pay the money back, you're a deadbeat.
Yep.
Now, they'll probably take me off Twitter and they're going to say, oh, that's hateful speech. But come on, did you see that woman who was in the Army, she was taken off of Twitter because she said, I worked. I served our country so I could get an education. And now I got to pay more taxes, you know, for these. And she didn't even use the word deadbeat. I use that term. But she was taken off Twitter.
Well, President Biden.
Speech.
Well, he's discharged $17 billion in relief since the end of March. I mean, it's going to continue because they need to buy votes of the younger generation so that they can become Democrats.
Of course they are. And look, and here's Moore's rule. Every single college in America, every university, University of Illinois, University of Chicago, all the schools in Illinois, all the colleges, every college, maybe a few exceptions, could be providing a better education at half the cost. If they would just get rid of all the way. I mean, the average tenured professor teaches 5 hours a week. Come on. I mean, that's crazy. They'd get $250,000 for working 5 hours a week.
Wow. Moore's Law. I thought Moore's Law was the number of transistors in an integrated circuit doubles about
that's
every
Moore.
2 years. That's a different Moore.
Gotcha. Well, my law is not going to be quite as famous as that one.
Okay.
Why is it? Why is it that when I went to the University of Illinois, I graduated in 1983. I was paying $1,000 a semester. Now it's $11,000 a semester or more. It's probably even more than that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. because another one of Moore's laws. I'm going to give you credit for it. Yeah. If you subsidize something, you get more of it. You subsidize tuition, you get higher tuition.
Pretty simple.
Pretty straightforward. Steve Moore, the author of Moore's Law, also the author of Govzilla and Trumponomics. Thanks as always, Steve. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Have a great week. Take care.
You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This was Pagliacci, that's your Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, on Easter Sunday, so this past Sunday, at A.R. Bernard's megachurch, the Christian Cultural Center in Brooklyn, talking about his accomplishments with nominating, he and his fellow Dem Socialists, accomplishments with nominating and confirming judges, starting with KBJ to the Supreme Court, but also including federal judges. Take a listen.
Under my leadership as majority leader, the first from New York, a majority of the new judges are people of color and 2/3 are women. We have reversed things. These judges, together with Justice Jackson, are restoring balance to our judicial system that was thrown out of whack by Donald Trump and his vicious, nasty, and sometimes even outright racists appointed to the bench. I also made history by appointing for the first time ever our three black U.S. attorneys in New York, Damian Williams, Trini Ross, and Breon Peace, who here represents the Eastern District. He's the son of Pastor Priest, who I knew, Pastor Bernard knew. And they hold the highest prosecutorial position in our state with the responsibility of overseeing and eliminating racial bias in our criminal justice system. So, my brothers and sisters, in conclusion, this is what changing of the seasons looks like. It looks like progress. It looks like growth. It looks like our everlasting struggle to perfect what was once imperfect. Lord knows it took too long to get here. But now that we're here, there's no going back. The stone has been rolled away from the tomb, and all those good things we hoped and prayed for will come to pass. So happy Easter. God bless all of you. God bless.
Yeah. Racial litmus tests for appointments to U.S. attorneys' posts or to the federal bench or the Supreme Court, equivalent of the resurrection. Rolling back the stone. Uh-huh. This, is, by the way, is the same black church setting. The same black church, A.R. Bernard's church, that featured New York Governor Kathy Hochul back in September talking vaccines in religious language.
Whatever comes your way in life, you are stronger. You are more resilient. God let you survive this pandemic because he wants you to do great things someday. He lets you live through this when so many other people did not. And that is also your responsibility. But how do we keep more people alive? We are not through this pandemic. I wished we were, but I prayed a lot to God during this time. And you know what? God did answer our prayers. He made the smartest men and women, the scientists, the doctors, the researchers, he made them come up with a vaccine. That is from God to us. And we must say, thank you, God. Thank you. And I wear my vaccinated necklace all the time to say, I'm vaccinated. All of you. Yes, I know you're vaccinated. You're the smart ones. But you know there's people out there who aren't listening to God and what God wants. Damn. You know this. You know who they are. Mm-hmm. I need you to be my apostles. I need you to go out and talk about it and say, we owe this to each other. We love each other. Jesus taught us to love one another. And how do you show that love but to care about each other enough to say, please get vaccinated because I love you. I want you to live.
Mm-hmm. The Pfizer jab is the eighth sacrament, according to Governor Hochul.
Yeah, and according to her, you're Peter if you don't, or Judas if you don't get your vaccination.
So the interesting thing about those speeches at a black church, 501c3, for all of you Catholic churches that are so afraid to talk public policy from the pulpit, so interesting. But that's a secondary issue. The interesting thing is that that rhetoric is not dissimilar from what you would hear if they were addressing a corporate boardroom. Instead of references to God, they just have references to opportunity or equity. It's all a rich tapestry of identitarian politics. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Daryl Paul, who is a college professor at Williams College, professor of political science there. Professor Paul, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So in your piece at, was it Wesley Yang's Substack? I think so.
Right.
That you write, right critiques of wokeness, if they are to become anything more than red meat for culture war fundraising appeals, must recognize the structural power of the professorial managerial class, enabled by the neoliberal political economy by the right itself has helped to create. So develop that a little bit for us. And also in context, what you heard from these Dem politicians from the pulpit, and you'd hear the same things just in slightly different parlance if they were giving a $100,000 speech before, you know, a Goldman Sachs luncheon. Are you suggesting that in order to be effective in combating this identitarianism, that the right has to abandon a belief in free markets?
That's a pretty stark way of putting it, but I think that's a fair way of putting it. Maybe I'll contextualize it a little bit. First of all, I thought that Kathy Hochul's speech that you played, which I had never heard before, was pretty wild.
Yeah.
That was pretty far out there.
Yeah.
But I think the main idea that I wanted to communicate in kind of a strategic political sense is that conservatives, Republicans have for a long time spent a lot of their political efforts developing markets and freeing business and trying to support capital in order to do all the various things that it does. And some of this, of course, is warranted. But what I think conservatives are realizing over the last decade or perhaps even more is that this is kind of a Frankenstein monster that's been created. And I think a great example is exactly what's going on in Florida today. Republicans in Florida passed the Parental Rights in Education bill, which was mostly dedicated to ensuring that schools could not hide certain kinds of facts about their children in school, and so parents could know if their children were being given services about transgender changes or whatever those kinds of things might be happening in school. That's the main thrust of the bill. And, of course, Disney Corporation was strongly opposed to it, although it kind of came out over time, and that's part of the piece that I wrote for Wes Yang's Substack. But what's happened now is that Republicans are realizing that these businesses have tremendous amount of power, and these businesses really hate the Republican Party, and they really hate this conservative cultural agenda. And so I think this is a time of real serious self-reflection for conservatives, because capital is not their friend.
And what you hear from the left is this unified theory, essentially, that is applicable, again, presented slightly differently, but applicable to lower to middle income families in a black church in Brooklyn, applicable to a Fortune 100 corporate boardroom. They have a play for both audiences that that is consistent, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think that's this identity politics, right, that you had mentioned, that if what the world is fundamentally composed of is different kinds of identity groups, and so therefore this is kind of pitched to those below with a claim that they're going to benefit somehow by all of this. I think if you look at how black Americans have done under certainly under the Biden administration, hasn't been so great. But much of the reason is because of the economic sorts of things that affect all of us. inflation, what I take to be some kind of dangerous saber rattling around the war in Ukraine and whatnot. But also it plays well in the boardrooms, as you said, and in professional class settings, because this really has become this wokeness, if you will, has become the culture of the professional managerial class. And I think if you go into any Fortune 500 corporation, you come to any college campus, you go to Wall Street, Silicon Valley, medical associations, all of these kinds of places, you hear this kind of ideology. It's just kind of become the belief set of this class. And so therefore, I really encourage conservatives to try to start thinking much more in terms of social class. I think conservatives have this natural reaction that, oh, talking about social class, that's for the left. I don't think that's true at all. And if we look to Europe in particular, we see lots of conservative movements that think a lot about social class, and I think they're more successful because of it.
So is Kevin McCarthy's announcement earlier in the year that the Republican Party needs to decouple from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, essentially the Chamber of Commerce has become big corporations, they're all left, they are not a constituency that you know, just sort of essentially banish them. This is not who we're in business to serve. There is no partnership there, and cede those corporations and their personnel to the left and focus more on the middle to upper middle striving set.
I think that's right for the most part. There's a danger, of course, in essentially saying, well, we'll just let all the most powerful institutions in the country go over to the left. That's dangerous. And so I think that really needs to be thought about. That being said, there's a lot of powerful people within the Democratic Party who look at corporations as just cash cows. And so, therefore, I think the corporations like a Disney, for example, or an Apple, they're not going to get everything that they want from the left either. And so I think what would serve cultural conservatives well is to try to work on some kind of pincer movement so that corporations don't simply have this easy out. They take over the Democratic Party, and then they run ramshot over everybody else, because I don't think that would happen. But I think there needs to be concerns about that happening, and therefore to think about an economic program as well as a cultural program, and an economic program that supports families and family formation. And a lot of the money to do that can come from places like Apple or Disney.
It strikes me as sort of like putting in a political context Sam Walton's aphorism, sell to the masses, live with the classes, sell to the classes, live with the masses. that's where the middle is where the people are. And frankly, you know, in aggregate, the money is really.
I think that's true, although, you know, the more inequality you get in American society, the harder it is to kind of make a good kind of political effort off of relying on the middle. And so I think that's an important part of any kind of conservative strategy as well, is to build up the middle class, and especially build up middle class families. And so I think there's an economic agenda here that doesn't simply assume that, well, let the market kind of decide and the market will work everything out, because what often happens is that the market makes big corporations with left-wing cultural agendas more powerful and lets them push around the middle or push around the masses or push around the kind of democratic will. That's exactly what you're seeing in Florida today. DeSantis, the governor there, the Republican House and Senate passed this bill and DeSantis signed it, and there's tremendous pressure from corporations to overturn what is pretty clearly majority will. And this stuff has a track record, too, and it happened in lots of states, especially in the South and the Midwest in the late 2010s around same-sex marriage bills or abortion legislation as well.
And so so thinking about that, so what has happened in corporate America in your view? Because, I mean, you still have a lot of CEOs that are baby boomers now Gen Xers, that didn't come up. I mean, they came up in part at the collegiate level in this era of speech codes and political correctness that has now metastasized. But certainly not, you know, pre-K through 12, certainly not every cultural institution so dominantly neo-Marxist, as I would term it. So why do all these CEOs bend the knee to this vocal minority?
That's the big question, and that's the kind of question that I tried to start answering in the piece, the kind of woke capital piece that we're talking about here. I think there's lots of different ideas. One of the ideas is that they're trying to placate a consumer base. I think there's some truth to that. So, for example, airlines for a long time have been very woke in their messaging, in their corporate giving, and all of these sorts of advertising and whatnot. And I think a lot of that is because you have to be on the richer side to fly a lot, and they're trying to kind of capture some of that market. There's an argument that it's all kind of driven by investors and the sort of the Black Rocks of the world and this ESG movement, environmental social governance investing. There's arguments that there's kind of a diversionary theory. They're trying to kind of trick left-wing people who are supposedly the majority, which I think is not true. But where I really come down is an argument that I think it's really driven to a significant degree by employees. I think a lot of CEOs, and I think, again, the Disney example is a great one, they are afraid of their employees. They are easily pushed around by their employees on things that are cultural. They're not easily pushed around by their employees in terms of wages, for example, or benefits, but they're easily pushed around on cultural stuff. And so if you look at the people, especially the people with a lot of voice and power at a Disney, at an Apple, at a Google, wherever, on Wall Street too, they have left-wing cultural values. They don't have left-wing economic values for sure, but they have left-wing cultural values. And they push their CEOs, and they demand that their corporations express their own political values. Some of the CEOs themselves are woke, but I think most of them are just worried about making their employees particularly angry.
So part of it, it strikes me as self-survival, right? For C-suite or self-survival, because if you say it's sort of like when the universities went, then the so professor afraid of his own students, and so you play the game silently or complicitly in some form.
Yeah, it's a great comparison. You do have a lot of professors who are afraid of their students now.
But what about the idea that some of these C-suite executives see this as a weapon where they can destroy people who might otherwise destroy them? Not so much self-survival, like use it as a shield, but actually use it as a sword.
Certainly there's a kind of a offensive aspect to this. I think that capital corporations that are more easily mobile can use it in a much more kind of aggressive offensive way. So, for example, you see this a lot with major league sports leagues, right? Pulling an all-star game, pulling the NCAA Sweet 16 from North Carolina, or pulling the all-star game from Atlanta. These kinds of things are easier to do, and I think they're much more offensive. But when you're a corporation like Disney and you've got this massive capital investment in Florida, you can't just pick up Disney World and move it somewhere else. And so I think in some of those cases, it's probably more defensive, at least on the part of the CEOs. But again, I think there's a lot of employees who have a lot of kind of cultural power. There's lots of conservatives who work for Disney, but they don't have any power. They issued a letter not long after this whole thing blew up in Florida, and they had to issue it anonymously because they're afraid, because they know that they are not the favored employees. The favored employees are the ones who went out on the strike, if you will, the walkout day, and are demonstrating against the Florida legislation. So I think in examples where corporations are kind of stuck, I think they're much more playing defense.
Yeah, and it was called the Disney Do Better Walkout, and it was a week of daily 15-minute walkouts during afternoon breaks. So I don't think it was really effective.
That's how it started.
Do you?
Although they did have a kind of a day at the end where they did it all for a week, and then one day they kind of walked out for an afternoon. But again, a lot of this is all made for media too, and so all they announced it, and all the reporters came and covered it, and it got on ABC News and all of that kind of stuff too.
And is DeSantis providing a blueprint for conservatives in his response to Disney most recently with reviewing their special improvement district and the $600 million in tax breaks it affords them on an annual basis? Is this the right play to take it right back at them and impose a consequence?
I think it is. I think what DeSantis has done more than anything else is he's shown that you can stand up to business from the right, and you don't have to just simply fold. I think there's a lot of governors in other parts of the country that have folded. For example, on girls' sports, right? We've seen that happen quite a few times. The governor, I believe it is, of Utah, had, I think, an order overridden by the state legislature. Right? So I think a lot of governors are conservative governors are afraid for stepping out. And I think DeSantis, if nothing else, has emboldened them because he's shown them that, you know, you don't have to roll over, that the state has its own power. Part of that power is the support of the majority of the electorate in that state, and that they should really stand up for them, the people that voted for them, the people that put them in power.
He is Professor Darryl Paul, Williams College Professor of Political Science. Professor Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
I'm very glad to be here. Thanks very much, Dan and Amy.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Well, I know what I'm doing this Friday night. I'm heading to the Common Sense Gathering from 6 to 9 in the Fighting 41st. By far the most Republican ward in the city of Chicago. Guests include Richard Irvin, Republican for governor, John Millhiser, Republican for Secretary of State, Steve Kim. You know the list, all sponsored by Ken Griffin. But it is going to take place this Friday from 6 to 9. And for more information, go to mattpodgorski.com. That's Matt, MattPodgorski.com. Tickets are $100, and it includes a full open bar with premium barbecue by Chef Ponzio.
Yeah, that will be an evening of pathological lying, like you just heard in that Richard Irvin commercial at the end of the break. So,
well, I'm going for the show to try and see if we can get him to come on the show and figure out what's going on.
You go ahead and tilt at that windmill.
I will.
So here's the thing. Again, I will repeat and continue to repeat, if you're tired of a Republican Party that is ineffectual and dishonest, then you should stop being snowed by the same liars telling the same lies. And that's Richard Irvin, who is a fraud. And that's the people around him who encouraged Rahner to sell out the Republican Party, to sell out conservatives, not just with public funding of abortion on demand, not just with sanctuary state, not just with a tax hike, to sell them out all together, that we pantomime the Democrat socialists, and that's the way we could potentially win an election. I can't do another term of J.B. Pritzker, so let's go with, for some reason, the guy that Ken Griffin and his political handlers have selected. Let's play identitarian politics and see if we can out-identitarian the left. Sounds like a good strategy. That charge there is a variation of the same charge that they have been making, which is a lie, which has been explained, but it will be explained again because too many people are too easily persuaded, even in the Republican ranks, even despite the fact that there has been enough experience with being defrauded that you should know when you're being defrauded. The audio you heard of Darren Bailey saying, "I might have voted for Biden," is the same 2008 election where he participated in Rush Limbaugh's Operation Chaos to get the right candidate out of the Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden et al. Primary. That's the reference. It's not just a different election. It's not the 2020 election like they're making it sound, like he may have voted for Biden over Trump. No. 2008 primary election, the one Democrat ballot he pulled, a charge being made by a guy and his enablers who has voted in 8 of the last 9 Democrat primaries, but he's the conservative. Are you serious? One ballot, Operation Chaos, Rush Limbaugh inspired, may have voted for Biden in that primary of 2008. Now established himself as the most conservative member of the General Assembly, ran in a primary against an incumbent a few cycles ago who he defeated because that incumbent supported the Rauner tax hike. The guy who stood up when it was time to stand up, the only one who did against the Pritzker lockdowns and school shutdowns and other COVID-related mandates. Nobody else in the General Assembly did. Well, what was Richard Ervin doing? He was imposing vax mandates on his employees. He was threatening businesses if they didn't comply with the indoor mask mandate. He was praising Pritzker when Pritzker stopped through Aurora.
Yeah, he praised.
So that's the
times.
Real conservative, Richard Ervin and his enablers. Richard Ervin is just a stooge for these people.
But if you watch the footage of it, he's like literally giddy.
He is
that Pritzker's in his town.
He is a blank slate. He's a blank slate being run by the same consultancy class who has undermined the Republican Party for the last 40 years, who continues to give you enemies inside the perimeter, that when they win, you lose, and when they lose, you lose. Because none of them were conservative reformers, even when they advertised that they were. And you're going to fall for it again? Are you?
And that list of state, you know, Illinois Republicans that are supporting Richard Ervin is just nauseating.
Who cares? It's the same old, same old. Have you not seen this movie before? Are you going to pretend like you don't know how it ends? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro. Text line. I know Ervin is too much of a coward. He's not his own man, so he won't come on this show to address any of what I just said, which is 100% true. He'll just allow the professional liars to continue lying on his behalf and the enablers within the Republican Party to continue playing Pontius Pilate. I'm an innocent bystander. You know, I like everybody. That's not good enough. No innocent bystanders. Sorry. He won't do it. So maybe some Richard Ervin supporter would like to call in. No, a lot of them. There, you got the list right in front of you, Amy. Yeah. Will they call in and go toe-to-toe on behalf of Richard Ervin as a surrogate? I doubt it.
Mark Batnick? I mean,
because what are they going to say?
I know. What are they?
What are they going to say? What have you heard someone say? I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear the pitch. Because he's a black guy, he can beat Pritzker. Because he's got Ken Griffin money, he can beat Pritzker. Billionaires are supporting two other candidates in this race. You think it's going to come down to money? Is that why Pritzker beat Rauner in 2018? Because of money? No. Sorry, no, not even close. It's just remarkable to me that Ervin is even competitive in this race, despite the overwhelming resources. And I know this is very early, and a lot of people don't even realize the primary is June 28th because that's a novelty, and they're not tuned in, and Easter vacations, and so on and so forth. It's 2 months away. But the fact that Richard Ervin is even being taken seriously by anybody. The fact that so many people are willing participants in this fraud
should
make you sit up and pay attention so it doesn't happen again. It is an uphill climb, as I've said from the beginning. Even in what portends to be a good year, it is an uphill climb for whoever the nominee is against Pritzker. Make no mistake about it. I certainly don't. But if you're going to play the ends justify the means game, and here's my political handicapping, as opposed to nominating somebody who will present a contrast to Pritzker, who will actually offer Illinoisans an honest choice, if you don't want to do that, then you don't want to change the trajectory of this state. It is that simple.
And crickets, where are the GOP supporters? Of Richard Ervin, I'm texting some. You want to call it? Tell us why you're backing him. What is it about him that you like? I mean, think about it. He was defending and promoting Black Lives Matter, and those are the people that burned down his town and looted his town so badly that he had to have Pritzker call in the National Guard.
They are doing what the left does.
Right.
How many times have we talked about this? How many times have you witnessed this? How many examples do you need before you recognize it when you see it, even if it's ostensibly on the right side? The professional liars, the combine Republicans, along with their latest marionette, Richard Ervin, are doing the same thing the left does. They are projecting onto other candidates who they are. The charges they're leveling against other candidates are charges that are appropriately directed at them. So go ahead. Go ahead. You continue to lie, professional liars in the consultancy class, combine Republicans afraid of their own shadow, enablers who think they're going to get some of Ken Griffin's money spread over to them. You go ahead and continue to lie about other candidates, and I'll continue to tell the truth about yours. How's that for a deal? Tom and Marsalis, you're on.
Tom and Marsalis, you're on. Yeah. Hello. How you doing, sir?
Good.
I just wanted to kind of piggyback off of what, you know, you're talking about here, and just, you know, maybe get some of these good candidates on your show to kind of interview them. I saw a guy out there, Matt Dubio. He's seems to be pretty good. I mean, there are some good candidates, but you're right. There's a lot of really bad candidates that are really just Democrats posing as Republicans. You think you'll have any other candidates on to interview?
Yeah, we will. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Tom. I mean, not just the governor candidates. He's talking about Senate candidates, congressional candidates. Yeah, we will. Of course we will. There's some good candidates. Keith Pikow running for Congress against probably Sean Casten or Marie Newman, whatever. Pick your socialist. Doesn't matter. That's an opportunity. Coolidge running to face Underwood. Be a lot better than Jim Oberweis if we can get a young guy who's aggressive like Mike Coolidge.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other candidates, too. I'm just throwing off some names off the top of my head. I'm sure there's some legislative candidates, but it doesn't matter if they're going to allow themselves to be run by Quisling, spineless doofus Jim Durkin in that operation. And the same thing goes for the Senate operations. Joke. Afraid of their own shadow. Will suckle up to anybody who's dangling a big check in front of them and sell out. And despite the fact, as I said before, there are plenty of people that have big checkbooks that could fund a real conservative reform Republican Party that wants to go toe-to-toe with the Democrat socialists and, frankly, expel the enemies inside the perimeter of the Republican Party. But, you know, that's work. That's too much work. It's just easier to fall in line. For some, and again, I think it's a distinct minority in the Republican Party. That's the good news. But there's a lot of people that pay passing attention, and they don't get the information they need to make an informed decision. And that's the job of campaigns, too. I mean, if you know, if that doesn't get done, then that will be the fault of the Bailey campaign, the Rabine campaign, the Sullivan campaign, the other campaigns. Just like, hey, I was, you know, the basically general consultant on Jeannie Ives' race against Bruce Rauner in 2018. We didn't get it done. Came very close. Didn't get it done. So own it. But there's a lot of people that could be paying a little bit more attention, the amount of attention consistent with what they say they want to see in Illinois. Well, if you want to see something different in Illinois, if you don't want to just spend all your time plotting your exit strategy, then maybe pay a little bit more attention so we collectively as a Republican Party in the state don't continue to make the same mistakes with varieties of the same profile. George Ryan, Judy Bartzepinka,
Jim Edgar,
Bruce Rauner, Jim Edgar, Jim Thompson, Bruce Rauner. Is there a conservative reform governor in the last 50 years that I'm missing? No, there isn't. There isn't. Not even close. And that's when we won. Kevin in Austin, Texas.
Are there any young conservative groups in Illinois, you know, 20 and 30-somethings, who've got the passion and the fire to do what you're talking about? Can you showcase those people to kind of to rise up and give them profile?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Kevin. I mean, I don't – Chicago Young Republicans was a going concern. I don't really – see as much activity from them as I did a few years ago. You know, we're looking.
Well,
I'm paying attention. But what do you get? I just, you know, where are the good candidates? Where somebody who's going to take the fight? And then when you have at least some good candidates, when you have someone to take the fight, then you have too many people asleep at the switch. So again, hey, just an opportunity. You're free to pass up on it. You're free to go down this much-traveled road, or continue going down this much-traveled road to political oblivion. Go ahead. If that's what you want, as my ad currently says, only in Illinois. Only in Illinois could something so obvious be so obtuse to so many. And frankly, for many of those who pretend that it is obtuse, they're just doing that, pretending. They're complicit with the other side, and they have been for a long time, and they've been around for a long time. And what do we have to show for it? Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.